If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
We've been touting Nugs.net for a while, but for those of you who don't know, Nugs.net is the destination for live music on demand. They have a growing collection of over 15,000 full-length concert recordings from bands like Umphrey's McGee, Green Sky Bluegrass, and Spafford, so you'll never run out of live music to explore. You can listen to a show from last night or from 40 years ago. You can hear our favorite picks every Wednesday on Live 5, powered by Nugs.net on this very podcast. It's available on desktop, iOS, and Android apps, Sonos, and BlueOS. Just like us, the folks at Nugs.net are live music fans, so they're offering new subscribers a 35% discount on an annual subscription. Go to nugs.net/thesound and sign up today. If you already have a subscription, give the gift of live music to a friend. There's nothing better. Again, nugs.net/thesound for 35% off an annual subscription. The show starts now.
Everybody wants to move.
been listening to a cover of the Tears for Fears 80s classic, Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Lettuce, off their forthcoming record, Elevate. To describe this band in any specific genre would in itself be as silly as their name. They are a genre-busting six-member funk, jazz, soul, jam, psychedelic, hip-hop, art rock, ambient, avant-garde, experimental collective formed back in 92 by four alumni of the prestigious Berklee College School of Music. But you probably knew that already. They've released a series of records, but it's been a while since 2017's Witch's Stew, a tribute to Miles Davis, came out. They're constantly on the road trying out new jams and even played some Jerry Garcia band tunes at Lochan Festival last summer. So with all that in mind, we wanted to catch up with Ryan Zoidis, the sax-wielding maniac of the band, to get some insight into Elevate and more. Our conversation took place before the NBA Finals started, so that's why we talked hoops a bit, but the conversation about Elevate started when I asked what took so long to get us new music.
You know, we generally, you know, Mount Crushmore came out of the Crush record and was an EP of stuff that we couldn't fit on the initial record. So that was basically capturing us in that point in time. And then, you know, the band went through some personnel changes after that with Kraz and Neil stepping away, and then Nigel coming in to play keys full time and singing. And then, so we basically really kind of wanted to flush that lineup out and see where we could go with that before we went in the studio together, considering that's the group that we were, you know, that's current and we're spending all the time together. So we really wanted to capture that, and we wanted to get comfortable with a bunch of material so we could be freed up in the studio to improvise a little bit more than the past records. And we also took our time with the recording process a little bit. We did it analog with Russ Elevato, and mixing takes a lot longer doing it that way. But I'm really happy with how it came out, and it really captures this our vibe right now. There's a lot of great chemistry happening, and I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, you know what? It's cool because even though the record sounds quite futuristic and quite Lettuce-y in terms of funk, it still has a very warm and analog feel. And I think a lot of that has to do with you, actually. And a lot of the stuff that you're doing now with the Korg X911 synth. Is that purposeful? Did you know going in that that's a toy you wanted to play with a little more while recording? I know that you've been using it a lot on the road.
I developed that on the road, and I did use it on the last record, but I didn't really have it as dialed as I do now. And I've just learned how to use it as its own instrument, and I don't know. Yeah, I've just been able to get a lot more expressive on that, and and all the guys love it, so they're encouraging me to do it more. And we've been kind of writing some songs around it, which is fun. And yeah, I mean that has completely changed the sound of the band, and also has, you know, broadened my kind of input as far as just like I have different textures to offer and different colors to put on the table rather than just saxophone. I have so many different sound options now, so it's great. I dig it.
When you guys go in to record, you know, you're the six-member collective, and you all sort of have very different tastes in music and stuff you listen to. I'm curious about how the songs come together. Is it you bringing stuff to the table? Is it Nigel bringing stuff? Who brings stuff to the table, and how does it all get sort of worked up so that you have pieces that you can play and improvise over? How does that process work? Because there is so much improvisation and there are so many different sounds. I'm curious about how the whole thing kind of comes together.
Yeah, well, you know, the reason why it takes a good amount of time usually is where we want to get comfortable with the songs before we get in the studio. But some songs come together while we're in there. Generally when we're on the road, since we all live in different places pretty much, when we're on the road, we take the time in every sound check to rehearse something or run something. And the tour before the record, the tracking of the record, we really worked on a bunch of new material and had 10 songs that we started playing in our set over a 1-year period. And we flushed them out on the road, you know? And then generally Deitch is the main writer on a lot of the stuff, but sometimes I'll record something at home, I'll send it to him. He'll write something around it. Everybody, Shmeens writes a lot too. Deitch and Shmeens live in Denver, so they write together from time to time. Everybody brings some to the table, and you know, Jesus also collaborates with one. We'll all kind of break off into a pair, and we can write together. You know, it's like, and then when we're together, we flush everything out, and live, you know, all this magical stuff happens, and a lot of times that will be, we'll kind of incorporate that into the recording or the composition of the song too.
Do you and Benny spend a lot of time together as the two horns guys going over charts and thinking about how you're going to add, you know, your part? Because really the horns for this band are so critical. And, you know, as much as we love Jesus and what he does on stage and Deitch and everybody else, I mean, the horns are a big part of your sound. And I would imagine that you and Benny have to spend a lot of time figuring out together how to chart stuff and where stuff fits.
Yeah, we spend time on our voicings, since it's just two of us.
Right.
So they're really so we can play them so they sound strong in a live setting, and they're not too we're not doing a bunch of overdubs in the studio. It's basically just us. Just maybe we'll add one more horn or a high trumpet or something like that. But we don't write charts, but we do spend a lot of time together getting our arrangements together. Deitch is a great horn arranger as well. So he usually has some input, or he'll just have a general idea and we'll come up with it, you know?
Yep.
But Bloom and I spend a lot of time together anyway, because we started a business, not related to music, but we started a wine distribution company in Colorado just recently. So we've been spending a lot of time together outside of the band, which has been cool, and hopefully that helps our horn playing as well.
You know, there's so much to talk about on this record, because, you know, you guys are an eclectic outfit, and so there are so many different sounds, whether it's, you know, the Tower of Power punch of Ready to Live, which I think is a cover, right?
Yeah, it's a Cold Blood cover.
Wow. And then, you know, the Prince-like swagger of Royal Highness. I mean, there's so many different sounds. And then, you know, you get this blues thing, Love is Too Strong. And Marcus, how did you guys hook up with Marcus?
I met him through Kraz, and we've just all stayed in touch with him. He's just a great dude and a really unbelievably special musical force. He's just insane.
Yeah.
So young and, you know, plays his ass off and sings incredibly. And he's just a really cool dude. So, yeah, that came naturally. And, I love how that came out.
I always worry when I see him that he's going to blow his voice out because he's so young and he sings so, you know, it seems effortlessly, but still with so much emotion and passion that I always wonder if he's just going to, hopefully, I mean, I hope it will never happen. And I guess Warren has a similar, you know, styling to his voice, and Warren's always on point. So hopefully Marcus is learning Warren how to maintain that. And then things get really, really deep. I mean, Trapezoid and Gang 10 and Purple Cabbage. Yeah. Those are all, you know, real deep space age funk grooves that are almost trip hoppy too. Like, these are songs that are really deep. Do they take a little longer to come together than some of the other pieces?
The beauty of those ones is that there's a lot of improvised sections.
Right.
And on this record, Russ Elevato really was pushing us to just to capture some of that live energy in the studio. So we Gang 10 is a 13 and a half minute song.
Yeah.
And we normally, on our past records, like when stuff like that in the studio would happen, it would generally get cut, and we would just release like the 5 minute version of that song, you know, with a fade out, you know. And if you listen to Gang 10, it seems like it's going to end like three times.
Right.
We decided when we got into the mixing session, we listened to it through. I had been listening to the roughs, just the bounces from the tracking for a while, and I was like, man, I can't. We got to just leave this as it is and just mix the whole thing. So the mixing definitely took 2 days for that. It's so long. And but other than that, we just left it as it was. So, you know, and it just happened naturally in the studio, and it was great. So there wasn't a lot of, like, rehearsing or arranging for that, except for the parts that were the original parts of the song that we eventually go back to at the end, you know?
Yeah. Is there an opportunity that Gang 10 is something that you might break up in a live setting and segue in and out of, because it sort of is in those?
We've done that before and hinted at certain sections of it. And we kind of do that with all of our songs now.
Of course.
They're all kind of interchangeable, especially those ones that you're talking about. Like, we can kind of weave a few of them together. Also with Trilogy, which is like a, from Crush.
Yep.
That one's kind of become a vehicle to go into different other songs. Like, we can go into Trap from it. We can go into Phyllis from it. We're getting better at kind of interchanging them spontaneously, you know, which is just a whole new dimension.
Yeah, is that something that you guys have to work towards or train your ear to come in and out of stuff? I mean, you know the material so well. Obviously, you've been playing it for a while. But in terms of making sure that everybody's on the same page when you come in and out of these jams and segue into other things, is that take a lot of...
Yeah, it really is because we've been playing together so long, we have ways of telling each other that. Just by hinting at one of the melodies from another song,
right?
A few times, you know, and seeing if everybody's down to go there, and it's really just like a conversation that happens musically. We do have little talkback mics in our in ears, a few of us on stage. So once in a while, we'll maybe do something random and call a different tune in the in ears, kind of secretly. But generally, that stuff happens just within the music.
Everybody Wants to Rule the World is a song that I never thought you guys would play in a million years. What was the inspiration for working that song up and putting it on the record?
That arrangement of that song came together as Deitch's original arrangement that he made a version of with Nigel way back in, like, I don't know, 05, something like that. Like,
oh, wow.
In Brooklyn, when Deitch and Nigel both lived in Greenpoint, and they had a studio down the street with Kraz, and they did that, and it just kind of got buried. And then we've been bringing it back live just because we're trying to switch up what songs we do with Nigel every night.
Right.
Bring in more stuff for him, and that became one of them. And then we just kind of, like, go-go go-go'd it a little bit more than the original. And it came out cool. Digging it.
Before we get to the rest of our conversation on the Sound Podcast, I wanted to remind you about a pretty cool deal the folks at Nugs.net are offering. If you sign up today as a new subscriber, you'll get a 35% discount on an annual subscription. All you have to do is go to nugs.net/thesound and sign up today. Now, back to our conversation. Did all of you have a hand in Schmink Dabby, or was it mostly Smirnoff who kind of wanted to do the Carlos Santana?
That was a Deitch and Schmeen's collaboration.
Right.
They wrote that together, I believe.
It's a wicked node to Carlos and to Trey, right? With those Latin flavors that, you know, Trey
totally
was fooling around with too for a bit. I'm curious about the Jerry Garcia Band cover set that you guys did. I think you did it first at Lockin last year, maybe?
Yes.
And then you've brought it out a few times since. What inspired you to take on Jerry's work?
We just have a lot of friends that are in, like, you know, Kraz is playing with Phil, Ali, Leo Fields with the Dead.
Yeah.
And we've just been kind of wanting to pay homage to Jerry in a cool way. And actually Peter Shapiro, who, you know, is the Brooklyn Bowl founder,
yeah,
and Relics and all,
and Lockin.
He's one of our great friends. Lockin, he really wanted us to do that. So we agreed, and which is a little bit outside the box for us.
Mm-hmm.
But once we got into the music and kind of like started familiarizing ourselves with Jerry's work, we were like, man, he's playing like a lot of Motown stuff, and some blues and some like funky grooves. Like, we could kill this. So we got into it, and then the Lockin' show happened, and you know, John Mayer and Bob Weir sat in, and it was a blast. Our Red Rocks show, the promoter for that is kind of like, you know, just asked if we would do it. And we're like, yeah, we'll check it out. It'll be fun. And you know, it's the cool thing about that set is that it showcases like Bloom singing, Jesus sings great. Schmeans will probably sing a little bit. And it just kind of shows a different side of us, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's a good side for sure. You alluded to this Red Rock show. It is Saturday, June 15th. You'll be supported by Talk, which is one of our favorites around here, and the Soul Rebels. I would imagine that there's potential for more collaboration. I mean, you guys are always collaborating. I think it was also at Lockin that you guys, was it Umphrey's that you and Benny hung out for?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So,
we did that whole rotating stage thing.
Yeah, it was so cool. And you just kept the groove going, which was awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
Sucked for tapers who didn't know when to end tape and begin tape, but... I remember watching it and I was thinking, man, I'm missing something here. I can't wait till it's up on Nugs because it was so cool. So Talk and Soul Rebels and playing Red Rocks never gets old, right? You've played there before.
Oh, man, it's one of my favorite places to be, period, for sure.
Talk about playing with, you know, Talk and Soul Rebels, especially Talk, who are, you know, younger and are, you know, making their way up on the scene. Do you guys offer support to these younger bands? Do you talk to them at all?
Yeah, for sure. Talk's been on the road with us before. Dave's done a couple tours with us, I believe. Like, did a couple short runs with us, and you know, we've become pretty. Schmeens is really tight with Charlie, the bass player.
Yep.
And I mean, we're pretty tight with all of them actually at this point. I think they're just super musical, super cool. And they have their own thing. I love Isaac as a drummer, and
yeah,
great dude. I don't know. They're incredible, man. They're a great band.
They're New York Knicks fans, though, so you know, they
yeah.
Not and everything Schmeens, about them is great, but
Yeah, I feel for him. I feel for him, you know.
Says the guy in Toronto waiting for game one of the finals to start later tonight. You are always on the road, and
you're in Toronto. You're in Toronto right now.
I'm in Toronto. Yeah, yeah.
Wow, are you going to the game?
I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm not fortunate enough. Tickets are really expensive, so I'm just as happy to sit at home and and do whatever I do here while I watch the game and chill. I'm psyched. But we're
unfortunately I'm going to be flying to the Ozarks, so I'm going to miss. Probably going to miss the game unless I can watch it on the plane.
On the plane, yeah. Well, let's talk a bit about that because it is a drag being away from regular life and being on the road. And this is your busy season. Not that you're not busy throughout the year, but, you know, playing festivals and being out there most of July, this is busy time for you guys. Is it tough to be away from home? I mean, you just mentioned that you're starting this new business, and I'm sure you have other projects on the go. Is it tough to be away for, like, extended periods of time?
Yeah, of course. Of course. You know, I'm also raising my daughter, who's 8 years old. She'll be 9 in July.
Wow.
And she, you know, but she's so experienced with this, and it's been getting better and better as the years go on, like,
right.
as far as, like, I'm only out for like two weeks, 2.5 weeks max per trip, you know, like, and then I'm home sometimes. Like, I was just home for 3 weeks straight, which was amazing. And I'm generally home at least 2 weeks at a time. And when I'm home, I'm really like freed up to be present. And I'm not like hustling around when I'm home. So it's great. It really like is, I've found a good balance. And plus being on the road is actually invigorating and charges me up because the music is so good every night. It just feels amazing. And I kind of come home recharged. I live in Portland, Maine. So, you know, I get to miss a chunk of the winter.
Right.
When, we're touring in the winter and I get to enjoy the summer. Like August, we're kind of off for most of it. So I have a bunch of time to get out on the water and just enjoy Maine and spend some time with my daughter. So yeah, I've actually like, it used to be a lot harder when tours were longer and, you know, maybe the money wasn't as good. You know, just things have kind of gotten a little more dialed and we can choose what our schedule is more, you know, these days, which is awesome. And it definitely keeps the morale of the band way up. And, yeah, everybody's really stoked right now.
It probably gives you an opportunity to get some of the creative chops going too when you're on stage with your brothers from the band and think about, you know, like we mentioned earlier, segues and jams and improvs that you wouldn't probably sitting at home hanging out with your kid and your family.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't get that right. same sort of creative flow going. I would imagine it's good to
just
turn off, right?
I mean, sometimes when we're home, we are communicating with each other at night and just, like, you know, sending around ideas or records that we're into, just
right.
and thinking about some covers that we could do or some vibes, different vibes that we want to try on our next record. I mean, it's constantly in our heads, and we're always looking for inspiration
right.
For that. So, but when we do get together, the good thing about this summer is that we have less festivals and we're doing like our own tour in the middle of July for 2 weeks, and that's being on tour, we get a lot more done because we have actual sound checks every night and we have our own gear and instead of just throwing goes at festivals every weekend, you know, we don't really get any of that. So we'll actually start working on our next record, two records ahead. Like, we're about to drop three records in, like, hopefully a year and a half. We have them all recorded, and it's, like, by far the most music we've put out in that period of time ever, so I'm stoked.
And you guys play these songs before we hear them on an album, right? I mean, you're teasing some of these things, you're working some of these things out all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the thing that is a little bit confusing maybe to some people is that we, you know, if anybody's listening to Nugs or checking us out live, like, a lot of the stuff on this new record people have been hearing for a while, and
yeah,
we flushed them out on the road. But the just the sonic quality of the record and the mixing and the different improvising we did in the studio just, I think, makes those recordings stand out and makes them feel fresh and new. And I think people will be happy with those.
It must be hard for you guys, because you are a live outfit, to sort of capture this stuff in a studio. I mean, it's such a different vibe that it must be weird to go in and lay some of this stuff down in a different way from the way you do it in a live setting.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's no audience, there's no crowd to feed off.
Right.
It's just us in a room with headphones on, but it creates a different mood and atmosphere for, and we're listening. Maybe we're listening a little bit closer and a little bit more fluid that way. But yeah, it definitely like creates a different flow for us. But since we've been playing these songs live for about a year, it comes pretty easy to us, you know, and it feels natural and it feels good now, you know.
What are you most looking forward to on this run that you're going on starting tomorrow, really? What are you most looking forward to over the next 3 weeks?
Red Rock, well, you know, our album coming out on the 14th.
Yeah.
Red Rock's on the 15th. That whole Denver trip. Our wine business is opening up that week, too. So that's a huge, huge week for us. That's what I'm most looking forward to. And then later on in July, we do that 2 week run, and we're going to be in Portland, Maine, and we're going to be raising some money for hungry kids in Maine. And we do a cool little event at a brewery there that's like kind of an underplay a week before our Portland gig, which is just fun. A bunch of my friends, great chefs, really good beer and wine, and we're going to be playing for like 200 people.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then back out to Colorado in August. I mean, you guys are hustling, right? I mean, you have to at this point. This is how you make bread at this point, right?
Yeah, that's touring is definitely our bread and butter. But we love it too. It's like, you know, we can't wait to play. When we're off for like more than 2 weeks, we're itching to play, and everybody gets a little anxious. But yeah, we're hustling, and we're going to hustle hard through this record cycle, get the second one and the third one out, and then we'll probably, you know, next year, we're going to be looking to get to Europe and kind of broaden the reach of Lettuce globally,
mm-hmm.
and try to get out overseas a little bit more, I think.
It feels like the last couple of years you guys have really been on the upswing, and I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's because Kraz left or that's not nice, but
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think we all bought into the team, like kind of like back in the NBA, where the chemistry within Lettuce right now is the strongest it's ever been.
Right,
all of us have like bought into it 100% as far as like our goals and our the future, and nobody's just on a gig, you know. It's like really special to all of us.
Yeah.
So that combined energy really, and our schedule, you know, playing, getting out there a lot has definitely like pushed the band to a new level, I think. And it's just real. It's honest music. You know, we're playing from the heart every night. There's nobody's throwing in, you know, going through the motions, you know. So I'm really proud of that. Like, I'm just lucky and just thankful that I get to do that every night, and we get to keep our integrity, you know.
I got to tell you, as somebody who spends a lot of time, because I'm up north, watching a lot of stuff, you know, on Couch Tour or whatever, and listening to Nugs, I can tell you that the fans, the audience definitely appreciates that and definitely feels that. You know, I get hype when I see you guys because I can hear, and I'm sure I'm not alone, I can hear the tightness of the band and how much fun, you know, even though it's tight as hell, I can tell how loose you guys are and how much fun you guys are having. So, I mean,
yeah,
that's
great.
There's
a lot of joy up there. I'm going to be nice, so feels great.
Awesome. Dude, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. I know you got a busy schedule, but we appreciate it. We love Elevate. We can't wait to catch some of this stuff on the road. And continued success, all right? We're psyched for you guys, so congratulations.
Thanks, Ira.
So there you have it. Elevate is going to blow the roof off your car, home, or frankly, your noggin once you hear it. I can tell you firsthand, it's a burner, and you'll love it all. Good thing it's out June 14th. For more on Lettuce and their tour schedule, visit lettucefunk.com. Before we leave you, though, have a listen to this very funky tune, Crew, featuring Ryan with some hot sax sounds.
You've been listening to the Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.